Okay, we are beginning. We're all supposed to have four sheets. And let's begin. Tonight, we are going to be learning about one of the greatest sages in Jewish history, Rabbi Meir. We should be familiar with Rabbi Meir, because any time a Mishnah is quoted and it is not attributed to a specific Tana, we say that is the opinion of Rabbi Meir. So that means that most of the Mishnayot, which quote opinions and have an opinion that is anonymous, that opinion that's anonymous is Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir was so valued that his opinion was authored into the Mishnah as the given opinion, the opinion that doesn't even have to be given a name. And tonight we are going to focus on Rabbi Meir. We will not get to read what Rav Shiragon writes about him. That will be next week. We're going to introduce Rabbi Meir, and after we familiarize ourselves with the Gemaros, next week when we read through Rav Shiragon, we'll know what he is referring to.
Is Rabbi Meir a Tana?
Rabbi Meir is a Tana. And we'll begin with the history. Where does Rabbi Meir come from? And that is recorded in a Gemara in Gittin. The Gemara, in describing the destruction of the Second Temple, describes how the Caesar sent his soldiers and he sent his general. He sent that Gemara in Gittin, Daf Nun Hei Yomit Beis, the bottom of Nun Hei and the top of Nun Vav. I don't know why myself didn't get copies. And the Gemara begins with the famous story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. The Gemara attributes the destruction of Jerusalem to inner feud between two men, and now we'll quickly run through that story. The Gemara says, yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to why Rabbi Meir is called Rabbi Meir Bal Anes. We'll do that too. So we're right now in Gittin on Hayam and Beis. That's the page where on the top the first words are Umat Ta'am. Okay, so I'll begin and then we'll go over to Nunvav. Akamta Uval Kamta Chavuv Yerushalayim. Jerusalem was destroyed over Kamta and Bar Kamta. Atanegola v'Tanegolta. Over a story of a male and female rooster. Chavuv Tumalka, the great mountain of the kings, was destroyed. Ashaka Derispak Charuv Beitar, over part of a wheel, the city of Beitar was destroyed. And then the Gemara expands on each one of these stories. We're going to learn the first one. Akamta Uval Kamta Charuv Yerushalayim, over Kamta and Bar Kamta, the city of Jerusalem was destroyed. Dahu Gavra, there was the certain person, the Rachme Kamta, he was a friend of Kamta. Uval Devave, and he was an enemy of Bar Kamta. Avantu data, he made a meal. Amale de Shame, he told his servant, Zi laitili Kamsa, go invite for me Kamsa. Azal, the servant went, Aitile Bar Kamsa. So he invited the enemy Bar Kamsa. Both Jews, Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. Ata, so the host came, Ashkechei Davi Yativ. He found Bar Kamsa sitting at his party. Amale, Nechdi, Hahu, Gavra, so the host went over to Bar Kamsa and he said, have a look. Ahu gavra bal devava dahu gavahu. You know that I'm an enemy of yours. My bayitacha, what are you doing here? Kum puch, get up and get out. Amale, so Bar Kamsa said to the host, Ho'il ve'atai, being that I came, shavkan, let it go. Ve'ahivna lachdneima de'achilna v'shatina. I'll pay you for what I eat and drink. I'm here as part of the meal. Don't embarrass me and kick me in front of everyone. I'll pay you for what I eat. Amar Lei Lo. We're at the top of page Nun Vav, beginning with the word Amar Lei. So we're in Gittin Daf Nun Vav now. So the host said no. Amar Lei Yehivna Lach Dmei Parga Desudatich. He said, I'll pay you for half the meal. Half of what the catering cost you here, I'll pay you. Just let me stay. Amar Lei Lo. The host said no. Amar Lei Yehivna Lach Dmei Kula Sudatich. He said, I'll pay you for the meal of the price of the whole meal. Amar Lei Lo. He said no. Nakte viyade, he grabbed him with his hand, the ukme, and he lifted him off his seat, the apke, and he kicked him out of the hall. Amar Bar Kamsa said, Ho'il mehabu yatve rabbanan v'romachu bei, being that the rabbis were sitting there, and no one protested, as he was embarrassing me in front of everyone, Shma mina kanichalu. I derive from here that they're with it on with him on this. They were sat there and they didn't intervene, so they probably agree with him in everything that he did. So I'm going to go and I will rat on them to the king. He went and told the Caesar, the Jews have rebelled against you. So the Caesar said to him, who says? He said, I'll prove it to you. Send to them an offering, a sacrifice. You'll see whether they agree to offer your sacrifice in their temple. Now, we know that non-Jews may offer a sacrifice in the temple. And we know that non-Jews have less stringency when it comes to their sacrifices. They can bring a sacrifice as long as it isn't missing a limb. Their sacrifice doesn't have to be as pure as a Jew's sacrifice. A Jew's sacrifice, even a small blemish, disqualifies an animal from being brought in the temple. But a non-Jew we're less stringent with. The Torah teaches us to be less stringent with their sacrifices. So Bar Kamsa is telling the Caesar, the Jews have rebelled, and I'll prove it to you. You send a sacrifice, and you'll see if they agree to offer that sacrifice. Azal shada biyadei igla tilta. So the Caesar went ahead, and he sent with him a fine goat. Behadi dekati, when they entered, shada beimuma beniv sfatayim. So Bar Kamsa gave it a cut on its lip. V'amale v'amrila, and some have the tradition that Bar Kamsa gave it a slit. He slit bedokin shebaayin, in either the eyelid or the eye. Duchta deledidan avemuma veledidu lav mumahu, a place where for non-Jews it's still not considered a blemish, but for Jews that would disqualify the animal from being brought. So the rabbis felt we should offer this sacrifice so as not to get the king upset at us. Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas, who seems to have headed the show at the time, he said, Yomru, people will derive from our actions that Baalei Mumin Kevin Negabem Yizbeach, that blemished animals may be sacrificed. Savul Lemiktirei. So the rabbis figured out that Bar Kamsa was behind all of this. They thought, if we can't bring the animal, so then we'll have to kill Bar Kamsa. So he won't go back and report to the Caesar that we didn't bring the sacrifice. Amalu Rabbi Zechariah, so Rabbi Zechariah said to the rabbis, Yomru, then people will derive from our actions that Matil Mum Bekotchim Yareg, that if one makes a blemish in a holy animal, he is deserving of the death penalty, and that's not so. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yochanan, who lived in a later generation, in reviewing the story, he said, An vetanutosh Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkula sechivet beitenu, the modesty of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkula, that he wasn't willing to step forward and either bring that sacrifice or get rid of Bar Kamsa, that modesty is what ultimately brought the destruction of the temple, to Safat Echaleinu, and burnt down our holy parts of the temple, v'iglitenu me'altenu, and caused all the Jewish people to be exiled from the land. So the Caesar gets
the second one.
What?
First or the second one?
Second temple. So the Caesar gets word back in Rome that the Jews have refused to offer a sacrifice. Shadar iluyu le Niron Kesar. He sent along Niron the Caesar to make war, to wage war against Jerusalem. Kikaati, when Niron came, he shot an arrow to the east. The arrow landed in Jerusalem. Lemarav, he turned to the west and shot an arrow. The arrow went and fell in Jerusalem. He went to all four directions, north, south, east, west, wherever he shoots an arrow, the arrow ends up landing in Jerusalem. So he understood that this is a sign from heaven that God wants Jerusalem destroyed. Amali li Yanuka, Niron went to a kid and he said to him, Psok li psukech, tell me please, what verse have you learned just now? What's the last verse on your mind? Amali, he quoted to him a pasuk from Ezekiel, from Yechezkel, V'natatit nikmati be'edom bi'adami Yisrael, I will give my vengeance in the hands of Edom, and ultimately they will fall in the hands of Israel. I will take vengeance from Edom for what they have done in the hands of Israel. Amar Samiron said, Kut Shabrichu Bai Lecharuvei Beite. God wants to destroy his temple. I see that from the sign of the arrows. Uvai Lecharuvei Yadei Bahu Gavra. And then he wants to wash his hands clean of me. I'm going to do the dirty work, and ultimately God's going to punish me for doing this. I understand from the fact that the kid quotes me this verse that God has in mind to give retribution to those who destroy the temple. Why should I be the one to do it? Arak, he ran away. And Niron became a Jew. He became a ger. He was on his way to destroy the temple, and after this happened, he said, not for me. I don't need to be the one to do this. He became a ger. Venafak minei Rabbi Meir. And from him came the great Rabbi Meir. So we want to know the roots of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir lived two generations after this. Rabbi Meir, 40 years later, Rabbi Meir is on the scene. We're going to see that Rabbi Meir was shortly after the destruction of the temple. Rabbi Meir is an offspring of this Niron. So this is a famous story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, and at the end of the story we see the roots of Rabbi Meir. The great Rabbi Meir came from Niron, who was the first general who was sent to destroy Jerusalem. When we speak about Rabbi Meir, so we have to know that Rabbi Meir was exceptionally smart, and he was exceptionally pious. And before we continue studying about Rabbi Meir, we are going to learn about Rabbi Meir's father-in-law, which will bring us into a discussion of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir's father-in-law was the great tzaddik Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion. And the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Zayin Amud Beis, records the story of Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion's assassination at the hands of the Romans. Quotes the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Zayin Amud Beis. Top of the page you have Dinachis Yitzchak. Those are the words on top of the page, on the photocopy.
34.
34, right. Tanu Rabbanan, we have a Tanaic quote that was verified to be of legitimate sources. Shenitfesu Rabbi Elazar ben Parta, when Rabbi Elazar the son of Parta and Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion were caught by the Roman Empire. Amalei Rabbi Elazar ben Parta, Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion. They were both sitting in prison, and Rabbi Elazar ben Parta said to Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion, Ashrecha, praised are you, Rabbi Hanina, that you were caught by the Romans, they have one claim against you. Oy li, woe to me, I was caught and they have five counts against me. I'm going to stand to trial before the Romans and they have five claims against me. Amale Rabbi Hanina, so Rabbi Hanina answered Rabbi Lezer, he said to him, Ashrecha, praised are you, shenitpasa al chamisha dvarim, you were caught over five counts, vatani tzol, and I'm telling you, you're going to make it out alive. Oy li, woe to me, shenitpasti al davar echad, I was caught over one thing, reini nitzol, and I will not be saved. She'at asakta b'tura v'gmilut chasadim. You, Rabbi Lezer ben Parta, you used to learn Torah with great diligence, and you also used to partition off a nice segment of your time to do gmilut chasad and to help other people. V'ani lo asakti ila b'tura b'lvad, and I used to spend all day and night learning Torah. I didn't do gmilut chasad. And then the Gemara goes into, how could it be he didn't learn do gmilut chasadim? We know he did. So the Gemara says, yeah, for sure he did. He was very active in helping other people, but he wasn't active enough. For someone of his stature who had learned as much as he had, he should have done more chesed. We'll skip down. You see in the left column it says in parentheses, Ketubot Samach Zayin. So now, second to last word on the line, Atiyu l'Rabbi Elazar ben Parta. They brought Rabbi Elazar ben Parta before the tribunal. Amru, they said to Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Elazar ben Parta, my time, why is it Tanit that you learned Mishnah? Why are you learning Torah? We Romans decreed you're not allowed to learn Torah. My time, I'm a ganav. Why are you a thief? So Rabbi Elazar ben Parta answered them. He said to them, Amalu, Isaifa lo safra, visafra lo saifa. If I studied the book, I'm not a thief. And if I'm a thief, I didn't study the book. One or the other. But if someone's testifying that I learned Torah and I'm teaching Torah and I'm a robber, so you know the man's a liar. Can't be I'm doing both. So, and just like you admit to me that it can't be that I'm a rabbi, I'm learning Torah and I'm a robber, so you see that the witness is testifying this is a liar, don't believe him on either count. They're both lies. I don't learn Torah and I'm not a robber. Both are lies. You see that the guy's lying. And just like you agree with me that you can't have both, so agree with me, believe me that I have neither. I don't learn Torah and I don't rob. So they asked him, why do they call you rabbi? So he said, I'm the rabbi, I'm the leader of the weavers. I'm the head of the band of weavers. We weave cloth, and I'm the head, so that's why they call me rabbi. Rabbi means head. I'm the head of the weavers. So they said to him, I see they tray kibure. They brought him two piles of thread. Amude, they told him, okay, if you're the head of the weavers, we want you to recognize Haide Shatya the Haide Arva. Which one goes on the loom cross and which one goes up and down? Which one's Shti and Erev? You should be able to recognize. You guys know how loom works. It goes up and down, there are threads going through, and then there's one thread that goes back and forth. So he said, when you look at these threads, if you're the head weaver, you should be able to recognize which is which. He wasn't the weaver, he didn't know. So the Gemara records that God sent a type of fly, a male and a female fly, and the male fly was on the part that goes into in between the strings, and the female fly stood on the pile that goes in the loom. And when he saw that, he recognized that's a sign from heaven. So he said, oh, that's the one that goes in between the threads, and that's the one that goes in the loom. And he was right. Because just like when you have a plug, so we always say the piece that goes into the other one is male. So that's how he is. How did he recognize? I don't know what kind of fly a ziburit is. In modern day Hebrew, they call a certain type of bug a ziburit, but I don't know if that's what the Gemara refers to, because in the Gemara's time, if a ziburit stung you, it seems to have been very, very painful and dangerous. The Gemara compares it to the stinging of a scorpion, which what they call today a ziburit, I don't think it's as dangerous. So I'm not sure what this fly was, but some must have been some serious fly. So they told him, Umay Taima, Lo'atit Lebei Avedan. We made a party in honor of our idol. Everyone came and pledged certain amounts to the idol, and you didn't come. Why didn't you show? Amalu, he told him, Zaken Aiti. I was an old man, Abelazar Ben Parta says. I was worried about you guys. You guys are wild there. You dance wildly. I was scared you'd trample me. They said, so he said, till today, how many old men were trampled in our party? God made a miracle. And that day, one of the old men was trampled to death in their party. So he said, you see, today someone got trampled. So he had an answer for everything. They said, why'd you let your slave free? You behaved like a Jew. What are you leaving and letting your slave go free for? It's against our rules. Amalu la yudrim olam. So he denied it. He said, never happened. Yeah. They did, right. I don't know. But I guess at this period, that wasn't part of the legal system. So one of the Jews wanted to come and testify that he really did let his slave go. So Eliyahu walked up to the man. Eliyahu Hanavi showed up onto the scene and he made himself look like one of the important Romans. Amale, and he warned the guy. He said to him, you see that miracles are happening. He's having an answer to every single claim. They're up to the last claim. You want to walk in and testify against him? If you interfere, don't worry, and this will also have a miracle. You see how miracles are saving him from every one of the claims. He wasn't interested. He wasn't listening to the person. He didn't know it was an Eliyahu. Come to Nimalu. He got up. He said, I'm going to go and testify before the Roman court that he really did let his slave go, that he's a liar. Havektive galta davektive kativ mechshive malchut lishdui lebei kesav shadua al yedei. There was an important letter that the important Romans wanted to send to the kingdom, and they were going to send it with him, and he was going to take this letter and en route stop off at the court and testify against Rav Elazar ben Parta. After Eliyahu came along, he kicked him away 400 parsa away. He kicked him to some foreign land and he never made it back home. That's it. And then he was forewarned. He said, I'm going to go testify against Rav Elazar ben Paritha. So Eliyahu bumped him off. The man landed in some faraway country and was never heard of again. Now, they brought so Rav Elazar ben Paritha has 5 counts against him. He has an answer for every count. He made it away. Atiul Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion. Now they brought Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion. And today is not the time to discuss how Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion was put to death. We'll get to it. But there are a lot of halachos learned from this story about euthanasia. And just take note of the story. We're going to try to point out the halachos. But we can't really go in depth. That deserves a few classes unto itself. But Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion, the reason we're studying this is because he is Rabbi Meir's father-in-law. And this will bring us to the story that Michal brought up about Rabbi Meir Baal HaNes, why Rabbi Meir is called Rabbi Meir Baal HaNes. So they brought Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion and they told him, Amrule, we're at the 3 lines on the bottom, the first white line, they told him, Amayka Askit Bohaita, why were you dealing with Torah? 2 lines from the bottom. Amar Lehu Kashot Sivani Hashem Elokai, I do what God commands. God said to learn Torah, I learn Torah. Notice the difference in approach. Rabbi Elazar ben Paritha tries to figure out a way out. And Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion asked him, why are you dealing in Torah? He says, because God says so, period. Niyad right away, gazwal av lisrifat. So the tribunal ordered that he get burnt alive. Val ishto la'riga, and they decreed that his wife get killed. Val bito, and his daughter they decreed, leshev dekuba shel zonot, to be forced to sit in a brothel. Alav lisrifat, why was he decreed to be put to death by burning? So the Gemara goes into what he did improperly, why he deserved such a death. The Gemara goes into God's secret name and how Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion tried to learn it, and in the process of learning it, he would pronounce the name and cause all kinds of miracles to happen, and he was held accountable for going too far with that. His wife, so the Gemara says that she was killed because she should have told him no. See here, the wife's job is sometimes to say no. She knew what he was doing, and she should have stood up and said, honey, you're going too far. And that's why she's held accountable for the actions, as accountable as he to an extent. She's also put to death. And his daughter, the Gemara says, she was once walking, and the Roman soldiers saw her, and they said, boy, she's good looking. And when they said that, she heard that, and she started walking a drop nicer. And for that, it was decreed that she should be put in a brothel. But wait, we'll see the end of the story.
Why is it burning, not the other three?
Good question. Good question. Okay. Good question. Yeah? Also a good question. Those are all good questions, but we got to continue. So, as they were being led out to be put to death, each one of them quoted a verse saying that God is just in what he did to me. He said, God's name is sacred. He is the rock that everything he does is whole. Atul tamim palo. His wife said, Kel emunah, God is trustworthy. Whatever he does is right. Ben Aveli does nothing wrong. Bitomra, his daughter said, God has such great plans and he sees clearly every footstep that a person does. She quoted that verse. And each one, the verse corresponded to what they did. And Rebbe says, look at how great these tzaddikim are, that as they were being taken out to the gallows, they had the verses to quote. Now we're going to take a step back. Before this decree, Kshechala Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma, when Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma was ill, Hanach Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion Levako, Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion went to visit him. Amar lo, so Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma said to him, Chanina achi, Chanina brother, don't you know that these Romans were placed in a position of power from heaven? Heaven decreed they should have this situation, that they should have this power. Don't you see they destroyed God's temple? They burnt God's holy altar. This nation killed God's chassidim. And they wiped out God's good men. And you see the kingdom still around. Rav Yossi ben Kisma says, I hear about you that you sit and you learn Torah in public and you have a Sefer Torah sitting at your side. So what does Rav Chanina ben Tradion answer him? So we have to ask ourselves, what's Rav Yossi ben Kisma asking? Aren't you supposed to learn Torah? There's a decree not to learn Torah. What does he want? Isn't that the whole story of Hanukkah? So we're going to leave a lot of questions in the story. We don't have time to deal with other questions, but we're going to leave a lot of questions, but it's a story worth knowing. Was Rav Chanina ben Chadion Antrim in Shemayim Yochamu? They should have mercy from heaven. So Rav Yosef ben Kisna tells him, I told you things that make sense, and you answer me, and from heaven they should have mercy. What kind of answer is that? I wonder, Rav Yosef ben Kisna told him, if you won't end up being burnt with your Sefer Torah. So when Rav Chanina ben Chadion heard that, he said to him, Rebbe, where am I holding as far as the world to come? Am I going up or am I going down? So he told him, tell me, did you ever have an occurrence, did you ever have one mitzvah you think you did correctly? And here we see an amazing concept. Rav Chanina ben Chadion is risking his life, and Rav Yosef ben Kisma just told him, you're going to end up burning to death with that Sefer Torah of yours. And Rav Yosef ben Kisma is his Rebbe. And then Rav Chanina ben Chadion asked him, where am I going in the world to come? So you'd think Rav Yosef ben Kisma would say, well, you're giving up your life for Torah, of course you're going up. That's not what happens. Rav Yosef ben Kisma asks him, can you think of one mitzvah you fulfilled properly? And this is something to think about when we do things that seem extreme. Very often we vindicate ourselves, we say, if I'm going this far, for sure, I mean for the sake of heaven. And our sages taught us that usually it's not that way. Usually, when we do things that are extreme, even though it should be giving up our lives, it's not really completely for the sake of heaven. That might be what's behind it, but there's a lot of other things playing. So Rabbi Yossi ben Kisna asks him, he says, can you quote to me one mitzvah that you really did all the way correctly? And Rabbi Chanina ben Chadion doesn't answer him. He says, learning Torah, giving up my life for the Torah, giving up my life for the Jewish people. That's not what he says. He says, well, I once had money set aside for a meal for Purim, and that money got, by mistake, I thought it was tzedakah money that I had, so I gave it to the poor. And then I realized that really that was my money I gave to the poor, and I could have taken back from the money I had for the poor, and I didn't take it back from that money. That's the one example he could give him of a mitzvah that he performed, and he says, that I did because I wanted to help the poor. I wanted to do the mitzvah properly. That's the one example from his whole lifetime. And this is the source, the Rambam writes in Makos and Pirush HaMishnayos, and Hasidim like to quote this, that our whole lives we are striving to perform one mitzvah purely. And when he tells him this, Rav Yosef ben Kisna says, I should have your portion in the world to come. You're going to Gan Eden. Rav Yosef ben Kisna passed away, and all the great men of Rome came to eulogize him. And on their way back, they bumped into Rav Chanina ben Chadion giving a speech, teaching Torah in public. They grabbed him, and they bound him up with the Sefer Torah, and they surrounded him with piles of flammable material, and they lit the fire. And they brought wool and soaked it in water and placed it on his heart so that it'll burn slowly. And Rav Chanina ben Chadion is standing there with the Sefer Torah wrapped around him, burning. And his daughter called out to him and she said, Father, can it be I'll see you in such a state? And he told her, if I were burning alone, then it would be very difficult. Now that I am burning with a Sefer Torah, you should know that the one who will avenge the shame of the Torah will avenge my shame. His student said to him, Rebbe, what do you see? And he said, I see the paper burning and the words are flying in the air. And this is a concept that has held us throughout our exile. Sometimes the bodies burn and sometimes the books burn. But the words, the letters, they float in the air. The spirit, that remains. So he told him, as he is being burnt alive, he said, I see the pages burning and the letters are floating in the air. So they said to him, Rebbe, open your mouth and let the fire enter. Euthanasia, you're dying anyways. You're in such pain. Open your mouth, let the fire enter, and you'll die quicker. That's what his students tell him. And he says to them, better that the one who gave me my neshama take it, and I will not harm myself. And this is one of the sources that's discussed in the whole question about assisted taking one's life. The whole concept of whether doctors can assist or not. The person, the Roman officer who was responsible for putting the wet pieces of wool on him, said to him, Rebbe, if I make the flame greater and I take off these pieces of wool, are you taking me with you to the world to come? And he said to him, yes. So the man said, promise me. And he promised. So right away he made the flame stronger and he took off the pieces of wool and he jumped into the fire. And a heavenly voice came out and said, praised are you, Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion, and this Roman officer, you're entering the world to come. And when Rebbe would recount this, he would cry. He'd say, some people have to work their whole lifetime to come to the world to come, and some people require the world to come in a small minute. This is also applied halachically. What does it mean that he could ask the man, he can't open his mouth, but he could ask the Roman, make it a bigger fire and take the wool off my heart? How do we apply that halachically? Does it mean that a person cannot take his own life, but he could ask someone else? Is it because this Roman was a non-Jew and his obligation with regard to murder is different than a Jew? This is all discussed halachically, but that's not our discussion tonight.
And how does he give them the right to
go to Olam Haba? Right, how does he do that? Rabbi Meir's wife, her sister, it was decreed that she should be in a brothel. Her two parents were just murdered by the Roman Empire. And her sister is being forced to sit in a brothel. So she tells Rabbi Meir, she tells him, you know, I'm embarrassed. My sister is sitting there in a brothel. Do me a favor, go get her. Also, this needs to be analyzed. Until his wife says something, Rabbi Meir isn't interested in saving a Jewish girl. She has to be his sister-in-law, and his wife has to be embarrassed in order for him to do something about it. What's going on here? Rabbi Meir took a nice sum of money, and he went. And he said, if she's really pure, then a miracle will happen. And if she's not pure, then a miracle won't happen. He went and got dressed up like a Roman horseman. And he stopped in at the brothel. And he went to his wife's sister and he said, I want you to come with me. And she said, no, I'm having my period now. I'm not available. So he said, I'll wait. So she said, there are other girls around. There are better looking girls than me. Why wait for me? So he said, okay, if this is how she's answering me, it must be she's kept herself pure. Even though she's in the brothel, she always found an excuse to get out of it. So he went to the Roman who was in charge of the brothel, and he said, I want you to give that girl to me. So he said, I'm scared. The emperor ruled that she has to be here, and if I let her go, then they could have my head. So he gave the huge sum of money, and he said, half you keep, and every time they send their officers to check where she is, you bribe them with the other half of the money. So the man said, and what happens when the money ends, when I don't have any more money left? So he said, here's what you say. Eloka de Meir aneni. May the God of Meir help me, and then a miracle will happen, you'll be saved. So he said, how do I know what you're telling me will work? So he said, look, you have over there vicious dogs that are set aside to kill people, right? They tear people apart alive. Watch. He throws a cloud of earth at the dogs, and they start charging at him. He says, now say it. So the man says, Elokar de Meir aneni, may the God of Meir help me, and the dogs rescind. So the man says, fine, take her, I see it works. The kingdom sends their officer, and they find out the girl's gone. So they take this man who's in charge of the brothel, and they tell him, you're responsible for her, you let her go, we're going to hang you. They take him to be hung, and every time they try to bring him up to the gallows, he says, Elokar de Meir aneni, may the God of Meir aneni, and something goes wrong. They can't bring him up. They try once, twice, three times. They see something weird going on. Every time he says that, he gets something goes wrong, and they can't hang him. So they ask him, what's going on here? So he tells them the story. They hear the story, they say, oh, Rabbi Meir is on our most wanted list. And then they posted a sign, anyone who sees this face, they put a picture of Rabbi Meir at the entrance to Rome, and they said, whoever sees him should bring him here. He's deserving of the death penalty. One day they saw him, and they chased after him. So he ran into a brothel. They said, oh, that's not Rabbi Meir if he walks into a brothel. Another version of the story is there was some non-kosher food there. So he dipped one finger into the food, and he put the other finger in his mouth. So each time they thought he was eating the non-kosher food, he dipped the finger into the non-kosher food and put the other finger in his mouth, and they couldn't see it. And at this point, Rabbi Meir had to run away to Babel. He had to run away from Israel because he saw his life was on the line. And another version of the story has it that he ran away to Babel because of the story that happened with his brilliant wife, Bruria, which is where we'll pick up next week, his brilliant wife Ruya, the daughter of Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion. There's a story which we will learn next week about her wisdom and why she ended up causing him, she committed suicide and he had to run away to Babylon. That will be where we pick up next week, and we'll continue Rav Shira Gaon.
What was the name of the one that tried to get out of studying?